do it anyways. I'm Steve Bacon with Clark Regional Wastewater District.
Greg Schaefer, Clark County Public Works Development Engineering.
Am I?
Yeah.
Lacey Waits, I'm the OA for Development Engineering.
Hi, Don Russo, Shawby Williamson, and Wyatt.
Eric Galimo, SGA Engineering.
Andrew Gunther, PLS Engineering.
Mike Odrin, Olson Engineering.
Jamie Housley, Jordan Remus.
Steve Madsen, Auto Construction.
And Oliver Hodge, Community Planning Director.
Jose Alvarez, Community Planning.
Rob Swanson, Clark County Public Works.
Olson Tracy, Development Engineering.
Ryan, Mr. BIA.
All right, welcome everybody. A few administrative notes. Meetings are recorded and posted on the county's website. If you've got a cell phone, we need to make sure it's in silent or vibrate so that we can interrupt the meeting. Notice we've got CBTV here this week, so you're aware. Next step is reviewing and adopting last month's meeting minutes.
I reviewed and moved to approve without correction.
Second.
Second. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to abstain since I was not here last month.
When was the last time you've been here? And why are you my twin?
So we've got a motion and a second to approve last month's minutes without correction. All in favor?
Aye. I didn't hear a vote.
Opposed?
Okay.
I'm abstaining.
Jamie abstains.
Don't know.
Passes. Review of upcoming events.
Great. Upcoming events, page 2 on the back page there of your agenda. Standard county council work sessions can begin as early as 9 a.m. every Wednesday. Typical hearings are every Tuesday. Tuesday morning, 10 a.m., with the exception of first Tuesday, is normally 6 p.m., although I think in November, with the elections, they are not holding an evening meeting next Tuesday. That will still be a morning meeting.
Thank you, Don.
All of that is on the county website. Specific work session, updating code for compliance with home rule charter. That is next Tuesday, November 7th, 9:30 a.m. And for Planning Commission work sessions and hearings, a work session on the biannual code amendments, Jan Mazzola leading that up, November 1st, 5:30 p.m. This evening. Of course, yeah, that's this evening. And then also a hearing, urban holding removal staff report, notice of DNS map, Clark County Regional Wastewater District Capital Facilities Plan update, staff report, notice of DNS. Biannual code amendment, staff report, notes of DNS, all of that in 2 weeks, November 15th, 6:30 p.m.
Again, the urban holding removal, what's the area?
It's 179 on the east side, close to Northeast 50th. This is known as House Homes, represented by Mr. Randy Prince.
So is it just a few parcels, or is it a larger area?
It's a large area. The proposal is for about 600 home sites. That's all I can say, it's about 143 acres total. So the potential of 600, a little bit over 600 single family, and it's probably going to be a mix. So that's what we're looking at.
So there's a bunch of area right up 179. It's kind of held up on the moratorium. Is some of that being released then?
If you recall, all that area that is close to the interchange is all commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And held up by or owned by Lanskinian. We are looking at removing up and holding in phases. We've done phase one. Killian, and this is phase two of that, not phase two of releasing up and for that area. We also have another area, two properties, Wallen and Hinton, that Jimmy represents, that will be coming up next. So we are done with phase two of the complex.
So any improvements proposed with that, or is it trips that are vested, basically?
For Killian, he's using the trip that was vested. For Holt Homes, and I'm sure Hinton and Wallen, there's going to be some improvements. Some, as you know, come from actual development, and then some are needed infrastructure that become, it's going to be both private and, you know, public. We're going to look at that. And at this point, we still have issues, as you can tell, and Jimmy can jump in. The capacity really is going to be improvement to one I-5 and the interchange. Other things that will happen, and you know, just going to be things that will normally come with frontage improvement and other required improvement. But the major issue is going to be improvement of the I-5 and interchange. That is later, you know, there is some funding from state, and I think it's in the state biannual for 2023-25, for a neighborhood of 50 million. So that's really going to be where, with that improvement, is going to be capacity. But there will still be some improvement required for in the cost of normal development that the county will be looking at.
Oliver, I might have missed this, but can the improvement or can development happen before the state improvement?
That's a good question. We've always been wrestling with that, whether the improvement will require the private property owners to do. What impact would that have when the improvement on the interchange is not happening and simultaneously? We wish, everybody wished that the interchange improvement would have done, would have been completed, then we know what the capacity is out there, what right. are you required to do, or what will your development contribute or not contribute. So that's really the some of the issues that we face. So it's going to be timing. We won't require you to do some improvement that is going to be thrown away.
Yeah.
You know, so we are dealing with those issues and we'll see where we land going forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Question on that, please, Oliver. The improvements or the projects that have been approved out there, they're subject to individual developers agreement? Or is there a region-wide process that everybody can follow and make their way through the entitlement process?
Well, as you know, one of the issues that we face is the fact that for the Killian project, we've already tied up capacity, if you will.
Yeah.
So you will assume that you would have been the first to go in and do this own development without tying anybody else up. We are really going to be working with him to see how quick he moves. So I believe that the first DA we have, that is the developers agreement he has with the county, was approved in 2002 or 12, maybe off. But right now we are beginning to look at that area. There is significant capacity both in terms of jobs and housing.
Yeah.
So we are now beginning to look at what do we do to look at releasing urban holding in the 179 corridor. So Killian has always maintained that he's first, and our concurrency is first in.
Sure.
Yeah.
Makes
so
sense. Yeah.
We are working with him, and as he moves, others will have the opportunity to
thank you.
Move as well.
Steve, I actually have one not shown on the agenda. It just came in yesterday, but Jan asked for just a few minutes. Got a couple of items. In fact, the information included in your packet there, but after he met, I think it was with the Planning Commission, he had just a couple of additional items for the biennial code amendment. And so I invited him in here at about 3:15. As you see there on your packet, it's with legal law determination and land division. So an add there to the to our agenda.
Next up is...
I have one thing. If we have time at the end, it looks like we have a fairly short meeting today. We haven't really taken a look at our work plan lately. So if we have a few minutes at the end of the meeting, I'd like to just take a few moments and go through the work plan, see if there's any low-hanging fruit that we might be able to bring up again and start addressing for future meetings.
Okay?
Good idea.
I guess that there's another one or two, because we're getting on the end of the year, which means next month we should be thinking about election of chair and vice chair for next year.
Yeah, wonder who that's going to be.
That went fast, Steve. I don't feel like you've served a full year yet.
You served for so much longer.
I know I did.
Now, move on.
Yeah. I will turn this over to Jose. Jose is actually the program project manager for this project, and he's a freight rail dependent uses. So last time that both of us appeared here, you asked for a follow-up when we really know where the council or where this project is moving. Now we have some, what I may call, one step forward, and now there is a pause. So I will just ask Jose to go over the one page that you just passed out. Then we are here to answer your questions.
All right, so I think since last time I was here talking about this project, we had a meeting with council, work session with council, and then follow-up council time about the input we got from the community about the project. And this is the handout I gave you, is just sort of a summary of the council's direction after the council time on October 3rd. And then on the back page is the press release that was issued October 30th on the status of the project that is essentially on hold until 2019. And the bullet points list previous to that. So I don't have anything else for you at this point. But once we get any indication to proceed, we would be glad to come back and share that with you.
Well, I think it's safe to say that we have direction to proceed. The question is that there are schedule conflicts that the council and the planning commission could not meet because of those scheduling conflicts. We are now into the holiday period. So what is on the first page of what was then handed out is the direction from council. Should the council and the PC have their joint hearing, this is what will go before what the planning commission and the council will be taking testimony on. And that is to proceed with no change to the January 9th over there map, which some of you have seen before, and have the planning commission consider amendment to both the comprehensive plan and Title 40 to allow sewer for the freight rail dependent use area, and also to consider the development regulations as recommended by the advisory committee. The use list that will include, depending on how you read this, including the heavy industrial uses, or excluding them as recommended by the advisory group, or considering all those use lists as a conditional use to go through the conditional use permit. That's really the three directive from the council should, when the council and the planning commission have their joint hearing, that's what they will be. That's what is going to be in front of them that the public will testify to. So that's really the directive from the council. But at the back, as Jose indicated, due to a scheduling conflict, the council have wanted this now to be considered in 2019. They will let us know when that will be.
Do we have any pending proposals for projects along that line right now that we may lose with the delay? Or are they, there's really nothing active?
I don't know. Speculation. As you recall, there were inquiries, and all we had was the list from Columbia River Economic Development Council. I cannot tell you how active those inquiries are. Something that we may follow up, or Eric Campbell may know, I have no idea. But all we know is that during the course of this project, there have been inquiries about those that want to use the well. I don't know where that starts now.
The extension of sewer for the Great Well dependent uses. If you're six parcels up from sewer from the growth management line, urban growth boundary line, is that going to be contemplated in that code change? Is that what we're saying, that you can, wherever you are on the FRDU, you would have the permission to extend sewer outside of the urban growth boundary? Is that, I mean, to me that makes sense, but I mean, because otherwise you could go parcel by parcel by parcel, and not every parcel would fit maybe a particular big user that we want to have in. So I'm curious whether you guys have considered that, or whether it's got to kind of go section by section by section.
So right now the only area that's is a 300 acre area between 119th and 149th.
And like.
The proposal from the advisory committee was to be able to serve that entire area.
Okay.
This kind of summary, I guess, Jose, it talks about a series of issues. It looks like that's why this is being delayed. And in the third and fourth paragraph, economic development, and there, it seems if you read between the lines, there are concerns that were raised. Can you tell us what those were? Thank you.
What I can say is that when staff at the direction of the council to have the open house that was done at Hawkinson High School, there was what I may call a significant community input, I would say, and we also did a survey. The majority of that was really strongly in opposition to what was being proposed. Now, since then, we have been, that's why we had to come back to the council to report back to them when we had the work session with the council, and they followed it up with the council time. And trying to weigh what options would they put out there, given that input from the community. So,
and what is that opposition, though?
The opposition is just the entire.
Initially, the proposal was to expand this to a mile from the rail line.
Right.
There was significant opposition to that increase.
Okay.
There was also significant opposition to some of the uses, primarily the asphalt batch plant and some of the heavier industrial uses.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Okay.
And not at the intention of staff, we just looked at the category of uses, and it was electrical engineering, I can't remember the category, but
electric
power generation, and some of the uses they include nuclear, for example, nuclear plant, and there was some
good idea.
It wasn't intentional, and if we were to move this forward, we would probably ask that be deleted, if you will. So it's just some of those concerns that was expressed out there and probably shared with the council. And they want to give it some thought before we proceed. You know, you asked the question on the sewer. And there are two schools of thought on that, but that's not what the reason is. This is just a scheduling conflict, and the public still have the opportunity to continue to provide comments, not only to the council, but also to staff, and the council and the planning commission, when this goes to hearing, will mow that over before they make the final recommendation. And our goal is to implement this and, you know, be done with it, but we also want to be strategic and thoughtful on how it is done. And I believe that's also the view of the council, that they want to do it right, if that's whatever right means. They want to see this. We have the legislation. You know, this is an opportunity, and the council really wants to see that this is done properly.
Just give one comment from, and it's been 13 years, just realizing that the other day, since I've been in the mining industry. But I know we always looked at the railroad as potential from, say, Salacha Prairie down to a processing plant or something like that. A couple of years ago, even though I was out of the industry, I came to the council's hearing on mining. They made mining tougher by making extraction a conditional use. Asphalt batch plants have always been a conditional use. But one thing I want to point out is rock has gotten really, everything's gotten very expensive. We have killed mining in this county, and we're going to be paying for it to be barged in or trucked in, and or we have a pseudo monopoly and prices have more than doubled. So now I'm on the receiving end, having been 13 years ago on the giving end. But I wanted to point that out because I know that's a huge issue, and Brush Prairie and the batch plant issue there and rural center and all that. But it is something to consider. In terms of affordability, the cost of concrete, asphalt, and rock has skyrocketed. So.
Yeah, I'm sure that if we have the opportunity to come back to you, that you will be, you know, making some recommendation for the planning commission and the council to consider. So that will be up to you.
When do you anticipate that this will come again before the council to look at uses that be allowed or not allowed?
Well, as this press release is stated, it says until 2019.
Yeah, but that's only a month.
Yes.
Two months.
Don't know whether it will be January, February, March.
Yeah, you don't know.
I have no idea. But we will stay with the council to say when should we schedule that joint work session or the joint hearing between them and the planning commission, or do they want us to just move straight? Because it is the council that really I believe at the request of some members of the Planning Commission to have a joint hearing between the Planning Commission and the Council. We've done it in the past, and the benefit of that is that both the Planning Commission and the Council hears the same testimony. And then the Planning Commission goes separately and deliberate and send the recommendation to the Council, and then the Council deliberates and considers the recommendation of the PC and everybody's done. So. I'm sure that sometime in next year, could be beginning of January, the council will probably, everything would have settled. People coming back from vacation, and that's behind us, and the election and all of that. They'll pick this up and let us know when to schedule it.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Chair, on to the next.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On that issue, I would too.
Eric.
All right. I'll try to make it kind of quick so we have time to discuss a few more things.
Thank you, guys. See ya.
Thank you.
So the parks, the subcommittee's met twice. I think, Steve, you were at one of them.
The first one.
So a few of the things we're exploring, and it's been a little challenging because I think there's not as much incentive on the park side. They do have, they got their increase. I think, you know, even admittedly from them, they weren't expecting to get what they got. They were kind of going in for ask, and they got the whole thing. But now it's really, you know, they have it. There's not as much incentive for them to negotiate out of it. What we're looking for is balance, because we I think it's in our best interest as well just to have a good park system. We just want to make sure everything's counted that should be counted, and the fees are, you know, they're based on good assumptions. Yeah, so a few of the things that we've discussed is, one, counting all of the land that's in the parks, and things we looked at were, you know, joint use facilities with the school districts, Salmon Creek Trail, like open spaces like that, any private facilities open to the public. And I did dig through the actual plan, which I have here. I have a copy of it here, this plan. And the assumptions that we suspected, pretty much all of them were the case. When you look at things like, I always use Geyser. Geyser School is a good example because it has a large area that's even used for ball fields, very similar to the ball field. What's the other?
Luke Jensen.
So they have the side fields there at Geyser. Mm-hmm. None of that area is being counted in the parks plan. They have
three,
a small little park. It's
the
public.
Three elementary schools that were listed, but I'm not sure how they were counted in the plan. Out of however many we have in unincorporated County, I don't know how many there are, but I know there's a lot more than three.
Yeah.
And the thing that struck me was things like H.B. Fuller and Luke Jensen and some of the other ones were counted as special facilities that don't count towards any of the park area or park development. I mean, so some of those things didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me, but I'm not the one making the...
You should be.
Yeah, those are very good points.
And that's what you see throughout this. So those are, and we kind of, it's been kind of, you know, myself and then Steve, one of the meetings as well, working with the parks group. But we want to make sure that we're looking out for the board, like us as a group, making sure we have the right direction, because we don't want to go off on our own tangents. I think the direction we're going towards is, one, trying to count all those things so the ratios are right. So that's one of our goals. The other one is, you know, on the trails, and we kind of talked about this before, they're adding trails in. And that's great that they're adding them in. I think it's a great recreational opportunity. It's one of the things that probably has the highest use of any of them. But we also feel that that should count towards some of the goals without having, it should subtract from some of the other parks. So you look at things like Salmon Creek Trail, where you have a huge park in Greenbelt. That should count towards the acreage, the square footage per 1,000 people. And they go by these thresholds.
It doesn't.
It does not. No. Mm-hmm. What they've done is they've added another category.
Park right now is Climate Park itself. The rest of the greenway is not.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
I was kind of surprised to see what wasn't counted in the plan, because a lot of things I would expect to be counted are not counted. Even like I knew the smaller parks that didn't meet the threshold wouldn't be counted, but they do provide, you know, even getting that threshold down where the smaller parks do count towards it. That should also be in there.
Yeah,
even some privately owned parks that are open to the public provide a benefit. And if they don't provide a benefit, they take the burden off the other parks. So there should be, even if they say that, no, we're not counting on the public park, you can change the ratio or the amount of square footage because a need is being met in a different location. Same thing with the schools. They had some issues with, well, we don't own the land. It's just an agreement. Well, that's fine if you don't own it. You don't have to say it's parks land, but that is an available opportunity takes the burden off of some of the other ones, so that threshold could come down. So instead of maybe, you know, 200, I don't have them all handy right here, but like the 200 square foot per person or something, maybe it's 150 because these other opportunities are elsewhere in the community.
Yeah, or those count towards having met their goals. Now your area just expanded because that 1,000 people that you're trying to serve. Mm-hmm. You just took 100 of them out because they have a different opportunity here that they can.
And I'm not sure.
Like
I'm not sure how you guys are defining private parks, but I know, like in the city of Washougal and Ridgefield, you know, we're required to put parks out there, a lot of parks. And I don't know, again, the definition, I mean, they're private. We're required to own them and maintain them, but we're also required. in our decisions to let the public use them.
Mm-hmm.
So we may have to look at the definition of what truly private is, because I really don't know of any. I mean, there's some probably.
Well, if it's private and it's gated and it's for that
so private
only,
and gated I would be a different.
I mean, personally, I don't think you can count it. If it is, you know, an example is Erickson Farms Park. People from all over use that park.
Yeah.
It's got a basketball court. It's open to the public.
Yeah.
There's no, they might have a sign up saying it's for the Erickson Farms development, but the reality is it's open to the public. That sign could very easily be changed.
Yeah.
And I think they'd be happy to open it up because it's being used anyway.
The other direction would be like Mount Vista has their community center and park where they've got, they used to have a pool and tennis courts and all that. That's behind a fence with a lock. You have to have a key to get into it, type of thing. You can't.
Well, in a pool has codes and things, but there are a lot of parks
now,
and trails.
But there's the other thing too. If you're providing even a private park, then it takes the burden off of the public park.
Yeah, right.
It's the same argument that's made for private schools though too, and those don't get public funding.
And WSU is in town. They've got tennis courts up there, basketball courts that are open to the public. They've got that huge trail network up there. That kind of stuff. It seems like we're missing some inventory that's not being counted, and if you counted that inventory, you wouldn't have as much of a structural deficit as they have.
Yeah.
And we're just trying to work through that and figure out what works for, and trying to figure out what we can get some agreement on.
Does GMA have a definition or a guidance or law in terms of what? So
there's some national standards that they're trying to meet.
But those national standards though are a little looser than what the definitions are in the parks plan. So that's when you brought up definitions, the definitions of what these parks are in the parks plan, I think, need to be revisited
right.
Also.
Yeah, because the parks plan defines a park as having to be at least 2 acres.
Yeah. Whereas a neighborhood park nationally defines it up to a certain amount. Doesn't give a lower
acres or something.
Yeah,
doesn't give a lower.
Right. So they have like 2 acres per thousand.
2 acres alone.
So where you have, what's
you? Doesn't, you know, you can see why maybe Salmon Creek Trail would be exempted. But if you took the square footage of Salmon Creek Trail, it would be
significant.
Significant. Thank you.
Yeah, and they're not
I'm
counting.
Glad to hear from an engineer on that one.
Right.
I was about to throw something out.
So those are kind of the pieces, and I'm trying to give kind of bullet points of what we're working on right now. One is trying to count more area towards it. Two is trails shouldn't be an additional thing. It should go towards the general goal. The third one we have on there is some kind of a credit program. So if you build a private development, you get some kind of TIF credits. That one's had a lot of resistance with the parks people. And one thing they don't want to do is they don't want to get into an accounting battle. They want to like have each one, like, how do you account for all these like credits? What do you get credit for? What don't you? What if they get stuff they don't want that they have to maintain? So they're not really excited about the credits. But another idea came up, and that was a two-tier fee. So you pay one park impact fee if you don't provide any open space or parks within your development, and you pay another one if you do. So you get some kind of credit for doing some kind of a comprehensive development that includes open space and parks in it. And the details haven't been worked out, but it means they're still getting a certain amount for parks. And to be honest, Parks Department, you can't provide all the things inside your development. So things like Luke Jensen, those special facilities, you're not going to provide that amenity within your development. So saying you're going to get 100% park impact fees, you're probably not. It's kind of like a sewer impact fee where, yes, you might get credits for the collection lines and the pump station, but you still got to pay your portion towards the treatment plant. So it's kind of like at large facilities versus regional. Maybe you get some kind of a credit for the local parks or the regional stuff, but not the larger park infrastructure. So trying to do that in a certain way, doing a check sheet, if you meet these criteria, you're eligible for the lower TIF or the lower park impact fee. So what's your take on that? I mean, how far do you guys want to push the credits versus a two-tiered system?
Yeah, so my experience with that is in the city of Camas, we're working on a project right now as part of it, as part of the agreement with the city, is to put in a 5-acre plus neighborhood park. Park needs to be designed to the standards that the city has already set up for their parks. including the elements. It's the park plan is reviewed by the city. The construction documents are reviewed by the city and approved by the city, and the developer puts it in, and they get their PIP credits.
Full credit?
No. No, it's a credit that it's up to a certain amount.
Got it.
That is allocated however the developer wants to, whether it's all at one time or by per lot or whatever.
Okay.
But it's a pretty simple process.
It's happening almost everywhere else. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we did that in Ridgefield prior to their 25% taking.
There's some bitterness there.
I'm just kidding. But James would probably remember. I mean, we worked with the city, and I think we did get full PIF credit. But, you know, they looked at that, and we agreed to the value of the land, and we agreed to the value of the improvements with cost quantities, and we got full PIF credit for providing that park. Now, again, that was prior to the 25% requirement, but it was a very simple.
Yeah, you give a cost estimate, they look at it, you loan back and forth as far as your credits are concerned, based on the cost of an engineer's cost estimate on what the park is going to cost, based on a certain design, and they're working on it right now.
One thing I like about the full credit is that it also keeps everyone in check, right? I mean, so they're not asking for a lot of different things that they want, me to pay for, say. Versus what they, what does the community really need, and what are we willing to provide and pay for?
The caveat with this particular project is that it's going to be owned by the developer for 10 years. Yeah. Then it gets turned over to the city. Hmm.
So I think the difference is Ridgefield doesn't have a parks plan like this.
No.
They're really kind of, it's very dynamic.
Yeah.
So every week they have a different.
Everything's negotiable. Ridgefield.
What's that?
It's a great term.
Yeah. So when they see an opportunity, they jump on the opportunity. Like, oh, here's a great spot for a park. Can we make a deal to build this instead of having a plan? The plan's forming as development forms.
Yeah.
So here, what the resistance has been: we have these parks that we've basically promised different neighborhoods, and now we got to come up with a way to fund them. Our funding plan is through these impact fees. So, kind of joke, it's almost like a little bit of a Ponzi scheme, though, because they admitted that they didn't have funding. They were very budget shortfall for years and years because they didn't raise the fees, didn't have any funding. They could only acquire certain things. Now they got to figure out a way to build it. So they need these fees to meet their previous obligations.
But
so they're very concerned about getting credits, so then they won't be able to build the things that they promised the neighborhoods.
But then if they can count now some of those items that you're just talking about into
theirs,
then now you reduce that deficit, and consequently, what you should be able to come out with is a lower PIF at the end of the day. Because you don't have the deficit that you thought you had.
But you're not going to build the parks that you promised already.
Yeah.
That's been the...
No.
And there's a lot of wasted area.
Can I question, please?
Yeah.
I'm a little confused as to what the goal is of the subcommittee. In the sense that I think there's a common sense approach, but you have to have a willing partner. And if the Parks Department isn't a willing partner, then it's not going to go anywhere. So there's got to be common ground for it, for there to be any headway. And there's certainly goodwill on all sides, but the Parks Department has to have some...
The council has to be the willing partner.
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
That's a better way to put it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Julie.
And we are.
Okay.
And I'm speaking for the whole council.
Okay.
But speaking for myself, and I believe the rest of the council.
Great. Okay, so...
And they have been engaged. I mean, they've been engaged in the process. They're hesitant because they don't... I think there's a little fear that this would cut into funding that they need, and I'm not sure they are,
As any public servant would be concerned, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we all understand that. It's just I want to be sure we know what we're trying to do, what the information is we're trying to deliver, and who's on board trying to deliver it.
I would even go to a more fundamental question. Has the Parks Department given us a community survey or a level of service studies to describe what citizenry wants?
There are surveys that we've seen.
That's part of the plan.
Yeah.
That's all part of the plan. The surveys are all part of the plan.
they've given us the level of service that they're trying to meet, and it's the hard thing to wrap my little brain around is all the levels of service are based on acreage. There's nothing about amenities or recreational opportunities. It's all about
development, levels of development.
So
the reason why I ask is because, you know, Vancouver stronger. Vancouver, a stronger Vancouver, I'm sorry, isn't their client. They're looking at doing a massive package to address a bunch of structural items, and one of those items is parks. And as part of that, I think they're talking about raising their PIFs also up to, because they haven't been raised since 2004. But there's a recognition that that only plays one funding aspect, even for the delivery of the infrastructure. That there's additional general fund that needs to go in towards that, and then obviously the operation and maintenance is part of this package as well. I think just solely relying on PIFs is a little bit short-sighted.
And that's, the way PIF works, it's an impact fee, so it has to be your impact, and that's one of the things that I was trying to glean out of that. Basically, the PIFs that are in place right now calculate to about $370,000 per acre in PIF fees towards park development, which seems like a lot for just the impact that that the new development is having. The PIF fees shouldn't be